20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. You can get all your Pack-A-Day updates by following us on Twitter at Pack-A-Day Podcast. And remember, you can always subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, or Spotify. And, of course, you can check us out over at CheeseheadTV.com. I'm Kyle Fellows, and I am back, as always, with Andrew Mertig. Andrew, welcome. It is good to be back for another Friday edition of the podcast.
We're back. I don't know. I don't know what's going on, Kyle. It's the middle of July. It's
the off-season, man.
It's super hot in Wisconsin. And, yeah, we're getting excited about potentially what is football this year.
Yeah. We are in the middle of a project right now to get to know every team on the Packers 2020 schedule. We wanted to take a look at what each of these 2020 opponents has done over the course of the offseason to get better. So we're looking at drafts, free agency moves, coaching changes, whatever, anything that we can to gain a clearer picture of these teams that Green Bay will face this coming season. We've covered each of the Packers division rivals. Last week was kind of crazy, and we covered three teams in one show to break down the Saints, the Bucks, and the Falcons. But this week, we are back for two more of the Packers' 2020 opponents. Today, we've got the Houston Texans and the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, and you'd think that the schedule would get a little bit easier for the Packers. Last week gave me a headache covering New Orleans, Tampa, and Atlanta, which are going to be three very tough matchups. But then you see the Packers bounce back, and the Texans were a playoff team last year. And, of course, we know the problems that the Packers had with the 49ers. So continuing to be difficult games in the first half of this schedule for Green Bay in 2020. And the Texans came out in the pre-drafts period and made some newsworthy moves. I think controversial is probably going to be a really optimistic way to look about it. But if you look at the moves that they strictly made in signings and players leaving, what you find is sort of a big exodus of talent. You have the Texans re-signing quarterback AJ McCarron, their backup, and their kicker Kaimi Fairbairn, and that's kind of it for bringing back players. They went out in free agency and they signed wide receiver Randall Cobb. I think we know a little bit about him. Quarterback Vernon Hargreaves the third, and safety Eric Murray, all fine players. But if you look at what they lost, you see, quarterback slash whatever he wants to play, Joe Webb, cornerback Jonathan Joseph, cornerback Bradley Roby, running back Carlos Hyde, defensive lineman DJ Reader, edge Barkevious Mingo, safety Mike Adams retired. They lose running back Lamar Miller, who feels like he's been in the NFL for like 37 years. And then they cut safety Tashaun Gibson. That is a lot of talent to lose. And then you go into the trade market, and obviously the big noteworthy thing that Houston did this offseason was trading DeAndre Hopkins to the Arizona Cardinals for running back David Johnson in the second round pick. A lot was made of that because not only did they get rid of Hopkins for less than what you would think an elite receiver like DeAndre Hopkins would be worth, but they also bring back this what looks like a really bad contract in running back David Johnson. And then they go out and they send a second round pick to the Los Angeles Rams to bring in wide receiver Brandon Cooks, who is a fine player, but who does seem to be grossly overpaid for what his production has been and certainly isn't at the level of DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, I think you could get excited about the way that the Texans retooled their offense if DeAndre Hopkins was still in the fold. If they still had him paired with guys like David Johnson and Brandon Cooks, that could have been a really special and explosive offense. Obviously, that's an alternate universe that we're talking about there. And we'll get into our full reactions of this Texans offense and the offseason in general in just a minute. But let's check out their draft class to see if they were able to get any talent in the doors to kind of mask what Andrew has said is really a mass exodus and a huge turnover on this roster. So right out of the gate with the draft, we have to remember Laremy Tunsil is essentially the Texans' first round pick. They sent that selection to Miami to get Tunsil. In round two, 40 overall, Ross Blacklock was their selection, the defensive tackle out of TCU. The third round, they took Jonathan Grenard, the linebacker from Florida. Round four, Charlie Heck, the offensive tackle, North Carolina. Another fourth round pick this year, John Reed, cornerback from Penn State. And round five, Isaiah Coulter, the wide receiver from Rhode Island. So this is a top-heavy class for me. I love the Blacklock pick at 40 overall. I would have been okay if the Packers had taken Blacklock at 30. But then, for me, this class doesn't do much for me after that. I know a lot of people really liked Grenard, but there's not much for me to get excited about here. If you take Tunsil into consideration, I think you feel good about the potential impact that you have here in the first two rounds if you count him as your first. But this is not a very deep class for me.
Yeah, and it's fine to include Laremy Tunsil as your first-round pick, but you also have to realize that the Texans had to pay him a fortune. And I do mean had to, because of the draft capital that they gave up to get Tunsil, they could not let that guy walk. And so he became, obviously, a very, very expensive piece to this team. So instead of, potentially addressing tackle last year by giving up a mid-round pick, moving up one selection, and then getting the tackle that the Philadelphia Eagles ended up drafting. Can you help me with my name recognition here?
No.
I'll look it up. I can picture him in my mind, and I just can't come up with the name. Let your producer look it up. But yes. If they had done that instead of drafting Titus Howard, who, in fairness, looked really good at guard at times last year, but they way overdrafted him, and now they're stuck with having to go out and trade for Laremy Tunsil and then having to pay for him. And that's something that's going to cost you long term. If you look at that as your first round pick, that's fine. But again, there's some salary cap implications that are going to hurt you in that process. I really liked the pick of Ross Blacklock. I thought he was a good value at 40. I think that's kind of right in the area of, maybe somewhere between 25 and 45 that you'd have him pegged. I actually had him as my number two ranked defensive lineman, but I liked him a little bit better than Javon Kinlaw simply because I loved that combination of quickness and power. And I think he can be a little bit more versatile than some of the other defensive linemen that are in this class that might be a little bit pigeonholed into one of the run or pass. Grenard, my notes on him, he's a long dude. He's really good in pressing tackles. So he's going to be good at setting the edge against the run, moving offensive linemen in pass situations. But he's not very twitchy, and he's a little stiff in pass rushing. And so I thought he was really one-dimensional as a better against the run edge. And how much value do those players really have in the NFL? That's going to be interesting. For Charlie Heck, I did look at him as well, and he's a huge dude, decent movement skills. He's going to struggle with some counter moves. His balance is okay, which you would expect. A guy as big as him is going to struggle a little bit with the bend and also the balance. He definitely needs to get stronger for the NFL, which is a little bit alarming when you have a guy that is that massive. But he was solid at North Carolina in the run game. There's some injury concerns there with him as well. So I expected him to slide a little bit farther than the fourth round. But if you look at him as a developmental tackle and a good fit, then I have no problem with them taking him in the fourth. And I don't really have a lot to mention with the remainder of their draft.
So my producer was gracious enough to look that up for us as you were talking, and it is Washington State's Andre Dillard was Andre the Philadelphia selection that they could have moved up for. Obviously, you mentioned settling for Titus Howard. So a lot's going to
last week. I couldn't think of Alvin Kamara's name.
But and last week I came through for you, so.
you did, and this week I can't think of Andre Dillard's name. This is getting embarrassing for me. But it is the offseason, so I think people will be forgiving.
Yeah, but a lot is going to weigh on this. I mean, they've made the move for Tunsil. They took Titus Howard. So how those moves work out is going to go a long way in how this offense progresses and the success that they have. So something big to watch there with those guys. But let's get into this. Did this team find a way to get better this offseason, or is this a worse roster than it was? You mentioned this is a 2019 playoff team. So is this that team? Is this a worse team, or did they become serious contenders this year?
It would be really hard for me to imagine that the Texans got better this offseason. You know, they just keep drafting defense. And I think Blacklock and Grenard, even though I don't really like Grenard, they add to that continued commitment to the front seven. It seems like the Texans are drafting pretty heavily defensively every single year. But, you know, then you look at what are the positives of their defense. J.J. Watt, he gets another year older. He's been having injury concerns as of late. Whitney Mercilus is another year older. Their secondary got a lot worse. They lost Jonathan Joseph, Bradley Roby, Mike Adams, Tashawn Gibson. That's a lot to replace in one offseason. I do think their offensive line may actually be better this year because you're going to rely on the developments of Tytus Howard and Max Sharping. You know Laremy Tunsil's really good. Nick Martin and Zach Fulton quietly are two really good young interior players. And so I think through development, you could see a better offensive line product. But you lose Hopkins. That's obviously bad. You could see Cooks and Cobb actually maybe replace that production. I'm not sure, but you're certainly not going to have the guy that an opposing defense has to, you know, base their entire scheme around. And so from a Packers perspective, that's good because you're not necessarily going to have to tell Kevin King or Jaire Alexander to shadow Hopkins wherever he goes. So I think that makes you a more defensible team. I do think Deshaun Watson has the ability to take another step in his game, become really like an MVP candidate. I know he was sort of there last year, but I think, you know, he could make that leap into the upper echelon of quarterbacks and really carry this team, even though I think the talent around him may have gotten a little bit worse, especially defensively. So what did you think, Kyle?
Okay, so you were a little bit more gracious than I'm going to be here. And I think we do a pretty good job as we go through this exercise, trying to be pretty neutral about our opinions and really be honest about, did these teams get better or worse? But we talked about the value of the running back position on the show numerous times. And I think I value the position a little bit more than you just based on what I'm probably willing to give up for impactful running backs, especially running backs who give you that dual value as a serious threat as a receiver. But you can't tell me that you actually believe that an infusion of David Johnson, even in his best version of himself, is better for your team than DeAndre Hopkins. I know they had the second round pick thrown in there as well and those kinds of things, but you simply cannot convince me that this is true, that he helps this team in a way that's more impactful than DeAndre Hopkins. And this team filled its receiving core with complementary pieces. Brandon Cooks is a complementary piece. Randall Cobb is a great player, but a complementary piece. You've replaced a clear top three receiver in the league with complementary receivers. And fan bases make jokes about their franchise wasting their quarterback's prime. We've heard the complaints about how Ted Thompson wasted Rodgers' prime, and all of that, in my opinion, is overblown and overly critical. But my goodness, if there is a case to be made for wasting the prime years of a quarterback, it has to be the Houston Texans and Deshaun Watson. Whether it's the construction of the offensive line or the jettisoning of one of the best wide receivers in the game, it is hard to imagine how a team could do more to hinder the play of their star quarterback and really completely blow the opportunity to win on that rookie quarterback contract. I know that I'm being really hard on this franchise, and maybe I'm being a little bit unfair because you point out some of the good things that they did, but you look at the trade that this team made, the trades, plural, the poor compensation that they received for those trades, the head-scratching draft classes from the last several seasons, and it really makes you think that this may be one of the worst-managed teams in the league, and I don't think that they got better or did anything to convince me otherwise this offseason. And you know what? It's absolutely crazy for me to think that Brian Gutekunst was very close to being the GM of this Houston team. He was down there for an interview when he got the call from the Packers and that offer. And so I obviously think that that would have been very, very interesting if that would have worked out, Brian Gutekunst working with Bill O'Brien. But you have to think that this is a team that is in a much better spot if they were able to close the deal with Goody a few years back. We've seen them kind of struggle with the draft and with their roster construction. So it's just interesting to consider how things could have been so different. And really, this is a playoff team. We know that. But my goodness, Deshaun Watson carrying a lot of this, and now without his best wide receiver, it's just hard for me to see that. And I'm sure for him to see that as a franchise quarterback and what could have been this coming season.
And I think, you know, this is a good cautionary tale that teams should have a general manager and not rely on their head coach to be making moves when they're not necessarily qualified to do that, right? Like, we don't see that structure where the head coach is the GM very often in the NFL anymore. It works for Bill Belichick, but, you know, how much of that is Tom Brady and how much of it that is the people that he's surrounding himself with? Certainly, you know, that may be the exception to the rule, and I understand that Bill O'Brien is a Belichick protege, but it doesn't seem to be working. But let me throw one situation out there for you. I'm not saying that I believe this, but I've sort of heard this argument. Maybe this comparison hasn't been made, but you know, Brett Favre early in his career was very successful, but one of his criticisms was he locked in on Sterling Sharp too much, right? And then the very unfortunate injury to Sterling Sharp, and a lot of people actually credited that for forcing Favre to read the field better and get more comfortable with his other receivers. Do you think that there was some theory within the Texans organization that Watson was just too locked in at DeAndre Hopkins?
Man, I mean, I totally see what you're saying. It's really interesting because it's not like Cobb and Cooks are bad receivers. I mean, there's a lot of talent on this team. It's just so hard for me when you have, I mean, if you can imagine, like, you know, Devontae Adams, like, I mean, people have been critical of, you could talk about the Packers offense last year and how when Devontae Adams went down, it really forced that offense to be more diverse and spreading the ball around, those kinds of things. But I don't think that overall you ever make that argument that your best player coming off the field or going to another organization is good for your offense. And so for me, it's just that's what it comes down to. But what you're saying here is really interesting in that, like, Cooks does something very different than what DeAndre Hopkins can do. The speed that he brings opens things up, and maybe they do want to run a little bit different kind of an offense, and getting the ball to downfield to Cooks or quick, you know, in the intermediate areas to someone like Randall Cobb. This could be a great offense for Cobb if Cooks is able to draw a lot of deep coverage and just get him into space and do some nice things underneath. So, I mean, you could say that, and it could be great for his development. Man, it would have been nice to be able to include him in that plan, DeAndre Hopkins, that is, and what that could have been for this team. But, man, it's an interesting to definitely consider.
Just to clarify, I don't buy that at all. I'm just presenting it as a potential argument. Your team is always going to be better with DeAndre Hopkins, period. And if your young quarterback can't figure out how to read the field, then you need to teach him to do that and not just lock in on his one receiver. But I think you brought up an interesting point. Brandon Cooks is a field stretcher. So is the guy on the other side, Will Fuller, who we didn't talk about at all. And now you have Cobb and potentially David Johnson, if healthy, working that underneath. You know, that could be a really good offense. And I have no doubt about it. I think their offensive line is going to be really good. And I think their weapons around Watson can be good enough to make this a very serious threat of an offensive team. I just think their defense is going to struggle, especially in the secondary. And that's a dangerous proposition in the AFC where you're probably going to run into the Chiefs.
And Phillip Rivers, I mean, he's going to take that division by storm, right? I mean, that's
until his arm falls off in week 8. But that sounds like a conversation for next week.
Yeah, that sounds good. We'll save that one. But okay, that's been fun. Let's move on. Let's jump right in here to a team that's a little bit harder to be critical of their roster because it's good. The 49ers. Let's talk about the San Francisco 49ers. Can we not? That's what we wanted to do all last year, just not talk about the 49ers. Let's talk about their free agency moves and their offseason there. They didn't make a ton of splashes as far as additions this offseason. They did a lot to keep their own guys. and fill the vacancies left by their other players, but not a lot of obvious upgrades or big money additions in free agency. They did add wide receiver Travis Benjamin and offensive lineman Tom Compton, as well as defensive end Kerry Hyder as free agents, all on one-year deals there. But as I said, their biggest moves were keeping their own. They signed Eric Armstead to a five-year, $85 million contract extension through 2024. So obviously that contract had implications in other places in the roster. Defensive back Jimmy Ward earned a new three-year deal as well that pays him an average of $9.5 million per season. They also re-signed corners Dante Johnson and Jason Verrett to short-term deals. But the losses do stack up for this San Francisco team. A wide receiver, Emmanuel Sanders, joined the Saints. They lost Joe Staley to retirement. They released guard Mike Person, who later retired as well. But several players left this team via trade, too. Matt Breida was traded to Miami for a fifth-round pick. Marquise Goodwin was traded to Philadelphia for a sixth. And then, of course, the big one, defensive lineman DeForest Buckner, leaves the West Coast for the Midwest. And the 49ers were able to collect the 13th overall pick for Buckner in a deal that landed him in Indianapolis with the Colts. Obviously, the losses on the defensive line, that's going to be a big thing to consider. The offensive line, also a big need that was an opening that has been created. But John Lynch was able to acquire 7-time Pro Bowl tackle Trent Williams from the Washington Red Tails. They gave up a 5th rounder this year, but also a 3rd rounder in 2021 to make that deal possible. So I'm sure San Francisco and their fans feel a little bit more at ease with the addition of Trent Williams. But the bleeding hasn't exactly stopped. Just recently, we just got word that Raheem Mostert has requested his trade. And so he's not excited about his contract or the role that his compensation suggests that he has with this team moving forward. And so I think most Packers fans are hoping that Mostert gets his wish and finds a new home somewhere in the AFC far away from the NFC North. So a little bit of a shakeup here for the 49ers, some new holes to fill. And so, Andrew, I'm curious here. You're up. Did they do anything in the draft to effectively fill those holes?
Yeah, and when we talked about the Vikings, we talked about how they had 15 picks in the draft, and obviously that means that there's going to be some other teams around the league who don't have as many picks, and we happen to hit on two of them this week, and the 49ers only had 5 draft selections. They did have that first round, 14th overall, and they got defensive lineman Javon Kinlaw from South Carolina, which made a ton of sense. Obviously that's the pick that they get for Armstead, and they're just going to plug in the new guy. Or did I say Armstead? I meant Buckner. why do the 49ers have to have 2 defensive tackles from Oregon?
Crazy.
And I get them confused all the time. So anyways, Javon Kinlaw, my notes on him after watching tape, that he is just really a penetrator at his core, a fantastic first step, uses great power in his hands to disrupt blockers. He's a really fluid athlete, good effort, suffers from the same issues that many one gap penetrators do. He gets upfield at all costs and can get caught with traps and misdirections. He can struggle to handle double teams because he needs to refine his hand technique. And so, yeah, those are issues. And that's actually why I had him as defensive lineman 3 behind Blacklock, is because I thought he was going to be a little bit more limited early in his career. Well, guess what? If you are great at one thing, you can fit in with the San Francisco defensive line because there are other guys who are going to cover your butt when you're doing that one good thing. And so they add just another scary pass rusher into the mix. At 25 overall, he broke a lot of our hearts, or I should say John Lynch, the GM, broke a lot of our hearts by drafting wide receiver Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State, who is somebody I was absolutely infatuated with. He is really athletic. His long speed shows up, and he has really good short area quickness with the ball in his hands. He's a threat to break off a big play all the time. Also a really good kick and punt returner, like San Francisco really needed to add that dimension to their team. He definitely needed refinement in route running, often too reliant on quickness instead of deceiving the defender. He can struggle with physicality from a defensive back. I was actually surprised with how good of a hands catcher he is. Very reliable with his hands when he has space, but sometimes in contested situations, he'll try to body catch a little bit too much. He finishes runs with some physicality. He's not afraid to block at all. You know, sometimes he looks lost in blocking, and that's something he's going to have to clean up to get on the field for San Francisco, who definitely expect their wide receivers to be physical. So I certainly really like their two first-round picks. Then they didn't pick again until the fifth. They get offensive lineman Colton McKivitz from West Virginia. In the sixth, they get tight end Charlie Warner from Georgia. And in the seventh, they get wide receiver Jawan Jennings from Tennessee.
Yeah, Kinlaw has all the tools in the world, as you said. And with some good NFL coaching, that technique should catch up with that raw ability, and that is scary. He should be a stud in this league for a long time. And so, no secret, along with you, I was a really big fan of Ayuk, and I really liked him for Green Bay there. So that pick did hurt, just like you said, when it was made in April. I think the 49ers got some good players, but even more importantly, I think they got players who fit their needs, and Ayuk is perfect for Kyle Shanahan. And so you hate to see that. It's a perfect match there. So good for Ayuk, bad for the Packers. But let's talk about this team. This one's a little bit more interesting to me. Did this team get better or worse this offseason, Andrew?
All right, so I'm not going to directly answer the question right away, but one of the things that I always think about is we as fans get really worked up about opposing teams because we tend to think, like, this is a good team. They seem pretty young on the surface. They're going to be good forever, and it's always going to be a problem for the Packers. I just think as fans, sometimes we get wrapped up in thinking that teams have much longer windows than they really do. And you think back to that Colin Kaepernick, Frank Gore, Patrick Willis, Navarro Bowman, 49ers team that just seemed like they were a juggernaut. They go to the Super Bowl, and then, you know, they look like they're going to be good for a really long time, and the wheels just fell off, right? Like, you have some early retirements, you have some injury problems, you have, you know, some different things that caused that team to sort of fall apart very quickly. Part of it was they had a bunch of drafts where they just really swung for the fences and missed. They kept drafting these guys that maybe had first round grades and then dealt with a catastrophic injury, and they tried to pick them up in the second or third round, and they just never really panned out. It cut away at the depth of the team. Their players got really expensive really fast, and that really shortened their window. And this team is going to quickly become very expensive. You already talked about some of the contracts they had to hand out this offseason. That's going to start to chew away at their depth. Now, all of this being said, if we're just looking at the 49ers for 2020, I expect them to be really, really good. One of the top teams in the NFC. But I don't actually think that they got better. And it would be really hard for me to say that they did. Kinlaw might be really good, but there's no way to expect him to step in and replace Buckner immediately. Ayuk might be really good, but you cannot expect him to step in and just beat Emmanuel Sanders. Debo Samuel already got hurt. We haven't talked about that yet, but he's going to miss some time, a chunk at the beginning of the season for sure, and who knows how that's going to affect him when he comes back. And you really can't expect San Francisco to be as healthy as they were last year. So did they get better? No, I don't believe so. Are they still really, really good? Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And the point you make about Debo Samuel is interesting because I loved him in the pre-draft process of 2019, right? That's 2019, losing track of time. But that my biggest hesitation with him was the injury. And he played so well last year, you know, avoided major injury bugs. And then this happened. And you never wish that on someone. But this is a pattern in his career, and so you don't wish that that continues for a player. But obviously, as you said, it's going to be hard for them to have the health that they had last year and continue that good fortune. But obviously, San Francisco, a very, very good roster and a very good team who plays really well within their scheme. This is a perfect match of coaching and players and roster. I don't think this team got much worse this offseason. I think they made some hard financial decisions that resulted in guys like Buckner leaving town. But compensating by taking Javon Kinlaw in that first round, who has a chance to be as good of a player as Buckner, at least down the road probably, he will be cheaper. You know, if he can get there by the end of year one, he's going to be cheap for 3 or 4 years. Same thing with Sanders and Goodwin. These are big offensive pieces, but Brandon Ayuk could grow into a really nice replacement who is going to be cheaper, and that's what they need for this team to stay together. And then Trent Williams should allow them to continue on without much fallout from Joe Staley. At least that's their hope. And so I think this team stayed roughly the same as last year. No huge setback. No huge step forward. I think it may take several weeks for the offense to kind of gel again, especially if they do end up trading Mostert. But I don't think that anyone should expect this team to finish outside the top three or four in the NFC this fall. I'm with Andrew. This is not a team that I think you look down the road and you see all the talent on this defense. You cannot expect this team to stay together in that piece for more than a couple of seasons. But right now, yeah, this is a team that's going to be tough to beat, and I think one that the Packers will probably see again in the playoffs if they're lucky to be there.
Yeah, the one thing that I would say is there is some frequency of seeing the Super Bowl losing team not make the playoffs the next year, and I certainly wouldn't expect that of San Francisco, but I could go back in history over the last several seasons and say I did not expect that team to miss the playoffs. And so the 49ers are not immune to that. There's nothing about their roster that screams that they have to be good. But certainly from a talent perspective, and that's the way that we're gauging these teams, we don't see a significant step back.
That's a really interesting point, and that is true. Like, we do see that, so it'll be really interesting to see if we do see that kind of a regression from this team, because Jimmy Garoppolo is not, you know, I think he's an okay NFL quarterback, but he's not the guy who's going to put the whole team on his shoulders again. And a lot of times, that quarterback consistency, you can have movement around your roster, but if your quarterback is that rock solid piece, you can know that there's going to be a floor to what your record's going to be, or the play of your offense and those kinds of things. I don't know that you can say that about a Jimmy Garoppolo-led offense yet. I don't know if he's there yet. So it will be really interesting. And you have to remember, the 49ers were not a team heading into 2019 that everyone was like, yeah, this is, you know, a clear playoff favorite even. I mean, they kind of surprised people playing the way that they did. Obviously, their defense was a big part of that. But yeah, those are good things. I think we're short-sighted sometimes and we only remember what we've immediately seen in the past, but we don't know what kind of team that this is going to be in 2020. So all good things to keep in mind.
Yeah, and I mean, the Seahawks were a few feet away from beating them, winning the division, and then forcing San Francisco to go on the road in the first week of the playoffs, and who knows what happens in that case. Seattle's still going to be a really good team. We expect Arizona to take a major jump, so they're going to be in a fight for their division, for sure.
Absolutely.
So that'll be really interesting to watch. The Packers are going to be playing in Houston Sunday at noon in Week 6, and in Week 8, they will be playing Thursday night at San Francisco on a short week after hosting the Vikings. Gross. Thanks, schedule makers.
Yeah.
Really, really appreciate that. But on that optimistic note, that's all the time that we have for today. This has been the Packaday Podcast. You can find Kyle on Twitter at Packer_pundit. And you can find me at Andrew Mertig. Remember to also follow at Packaday Podcast. Please subscribe and rate the podcast if you like what we're doing. That really helps us out a lot. You can catch Kyle and myself every Friday. We're going to be back next week with a review of the Jacksonville Jaguars and Indianapolis Colts offseason. Thanks for listening. And as always, remember... Whoa!